I've had a productive summer so far. I taught my daughter how to bet on horses. It's pretty solid.
Congratulations. Well Thank done. You. Well, that Thank was you. Something that you're, I mean, you used to tell the stories quite often here on the podcast of some of your formative years spent at the track with your dad. True or false?
And without my dad, like as soon as I was able to drive, I'd cut school and buy cigars from 7-Eleven, the pre-rolled ones with the hole drilled in the back, Garcia and Vega, that are, you know, not meant for smoking tobacco necessarily, but conveniently you can split them open and put in something else, which I didn't do at 17.
Of course not.
That wasn't until college. But yeah, no, formative years at the track, and I was telling, you know, Vivian that it was a, you know, it was a really wonderful time to spend some time with her at the track, recently because it's a place that means a lot to me. But I went down the list of horses and said all the names, and she read some of the names too. So it was like a educational exercise.
Hmm.
And then she's like, Daddy, what are the colors of the horses? And I thought she meant like, you know, chestnut brown and gray, but she meant the racing silks. So basically it was if her favorite goofy name and pink lined up in a perfect storm,
that's it.
She was picking that horse. So I was betting like $2 to show, you know, first, second, third place. And the best thing that was that she hit twice and one of them was kind of a long shot. So then the next lesson in teaching your child to become a degenerate gambler came into action, which is that when you win things, when you win money, you can turn that money into things that you desire. And so, you know, for me, it's, you know, hookers. But for her, it's it was a lamb, a little stuffed animal lamb that she won with her winning, that she got with her winnings. So I think it was a real life lesson yesterday. A little bit of reading, a little bit of economics, find out the value of money, and a little bit of cathartic, adrenaline-filled wish fulfillment when you you win gambling someone else's money,
which is always nice.
Oh.
Conn Smythe bet on a horse that helped him finalize the purchase of the Maple Leafs. Trying to think of like horse racing and how it's figured into hockey somehow. And Conn Smythe is one that I keep coming.
Well,
back
I mean,
to.
You obviously Eddie Olczyk is the first and foremost reference to horse
he
racing,
is.
The modern
he
National
is.
Hockey League, and also the many horses have eaten out of the Stanley Cup. The Devils, when they won the cup, I think
really?
Danico bought it. Yeah, Danico bought it to Monmouth Park and had horses eat out of the cup, which was really fun.
Come on, I didn't know that. Really?
Oh yeah, for sure.
No way.
Had a horse eat at the top of the cup. Horse
That's...
never and true to form, the horse never went on to win the cup.
Oh, here it is too. And hang on, Conn Smythe also the Queen's Plate won $10,000 on a race and bought King Clancy from the Ottawa Senators for $35,000.
My dream
gambling
for,
winnings
for Bill Foley and the Vegas team. My dream
yes.
was that. When they got the franchise, like, you know, and that was signed off on, that he would then go back to the NHL Board of Governors and say, I really appreciate the faith you put in me and the market. I think it's going to really work here, hockey in Vegas. Now, I'm going to put $250 million on black, and I'm either getting this team or I'm not getting this team.
Hilarious. Hey, what did you make of, speaking of Vegas, what did you make of George McPhee being the choice?
I go back a ways with George, to the point where, and I don't say this for a lot of guys in the NHL because I'm not really tight with any of them, but like when I was at the draft and he got done talking to somebody and he was, walking away and I said, hey, what's up, George? And he came back to try to talk to me and like a security guy's like, no more questions. And George's like, that's okay. I know him. I was like, wow, look at that. I have a, an actual friend in the business on the other side of the fence.
This is how it begins. Now you're going to be just like the other ones, protecting all your buddies.
Oh,
now Vegas can do no wrong.
Yeah. Everybody on my side of the fence, I'm friends with, but on the other side of the fence, I mean, they don't know me from anybody, but like, George is an interesting cat because here's the thing with him. Like, you can't argue with the infrastructure he put in place in D.C. to perpetuate that team. And by that I mean the minor league system was robust. When they had high picks, they usually drafted well, Joe Finley accepted. Hershey became a powerhouse team, and it was a pipeline of young, good talent that fed that Capitals team. Now, there were some things he said that showed me he maybe learned a thing or two since his time in D.C., and there were things he said that made me a little concerned. I want to say that he learned a thing or two about contracts given out of loyalty, which was something that came up in his press conference. Because that Brooks Like deal, that Mike Green deal, might not rise to the Martin Erat for Philip Forsberg trade as on, the sin scale, but they were pretty damn high. And it was a very sort of stoic loyalty to a lot of guys that he drafted and came through the system that handicapped that Caps team in some ways. But one of the things that I was concerned about, and I would love to talk to George, I'm sure we'll talk to George many times before the expansion draft. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, he's saying, only way you win in this league is to build through the draft. Okay? On the other hand...
I don't know about that. There's a lot of ways.
Sure. I mean, he cited the Pittsburgh model, but, you know, good luck with that. But out of the other side of his mouth, he's like, I understand that Bill, you know, Foley wants to win now, and I'm prepared. You know, I think the expansion draft's going to really give us a leg up, and I think that we could win in short order. And I'm like, I have a feeling that there's going to be more pressure on this Vegas team to contend and succeed early than there's been on any of the expansion teams since the Sharks.
They paid the most expansion fee in the history of the NHL, and the NHL does not want to have negative headlines coming out of Las Vegas. This is a crucial market for the National Hockey League. This is one that has to be, this is a team that has to be competitive. Like, the story in the first couple of years from Las Vegas can't be, oh, the novelty team, Las Vegas, whatever you're going to call them, you know, got starched last night, 8-2 again. They've surrendered 24 goals in four games. Like, that can't be the story, that it's a bad hockey team. So for that price and the sensitivity around that market, they will be given every opportunity to succeed.
And they've gamed the system, okay, for the expansion draft to give them a lot of quality players. And this is also an expansion team entering into a cap league where you're going to have fruit falling from the tree as you do every summer. You know, every summer you get guys that don't fit into the plans financially anymore, and teams flip them. And, you know, the Vegas team is going to have some pretty valuable real estate when it comes to the entry draft and draft picks and things like that. So they could probably grab a lot. Like, the first call the Chicago Blackhawks should make every summer is Vegas, right? Like, I mean, next time they've got to deal one of those guys, and they always do, call Vegas, because you're going to get a pretty decent draft pick, and they'll probably take the player from you.
You think? You think
if
they
it's
will?
If it's win now, sure.
I don't think, but what is win now? Like, it's a nebulous term. What qualifies, I know, dummy, it's like you win the game, but what qualifies as a win for Las Vegas?
Contend.
Because to me, it's just be competitive.
Be competitive, but compete for a playoff spot.
Oh, geez, I don't know. That's,
I know,
that is a tall order.
But dude, that's what I hear when they say be competitive soon. It's not like, the bar is not set at, let's not get blown out 8-2.
That's kind of what I think it is. Let's not embarrass ourselves out there, boys.
I don't know, man. I think they believe, just
really,
from what everybody
eh?
said, I think they believe they're going to get such a bounty from this expansion draft, and they're going to have to spend a little bit in free agency.
You know what?
That they're going to be able to put together a team pretty quickly that they think could be something better than don't embarrass yourself.
I wonder how many deals will be cut with Las Vegas for George McPhee to not take certain players in the expansion draft.
Well, here's the way they're working it. So,
right?
In order for there not to be chicanery, there's going to be a period before the expansion draft where those kinds of deals can be worked out. Which kind of reminds me of, like, you know, this house on the streets legalized prostitution. it's like we all know what's going to go on. So, we're going to create a place where or a time where it's going to be, above board. And that's kind of what the NHL wants. They don't want there to be a bunch of deals that, 6 months down the road, all of a sudden it's like, somebody trades a second round draft pick for a seventh round draft pick just for giggles,
just for giggles. And all of a sudden, second pairing fourth defenseman doesn't get picked by Las Vegas.
Right. they're going to create, they've created a space where they can work out those kinds of deals. So that's going to be interesting to see exactly what comes from that. But I agree with you. And the more we see the availability of these players in the expansion draft and who's going to go where and who's going to be available, and it's going to be real interesting to see how many big tickets they take. Like, I wrote about Shattenkirk this morning, and I was reading some stuff with Jeremy Rutherford about Paul Stastny. And, he's like, the assumption is that he'd be exposed, but, the Blues kind of like the way he played in the second half of last year. I'm like, yeah, but he's Paul Stastny making $7 million.
That's a lot of money.
I can't imagine he doesn't get exposed. And then the question becomes, if you're Vegas, well, what do you do with that? I mean, he'd be good. He'd be obviously top six for you, maybe on your first line.
Yep.
That's a lot of freight.
It's a lot to your salary cap.
Sure, but it's a lot of freight I guess what I'm trying to say is that the canary in the coal mine is going to be the way they draft. And we're going to find out real quickly if it is simply let's not be embarrassing or if it's let's put together a little something that we think might be able to contend.
Which is why the hires are going to be fascinating here. And when you talk about drafting, one of the big names out here, let go by the Florida Panthers for whatever reason, I guess didn't do a good enough job making them one of the envies of the entire NHL
right. When
it comes to prospects, is Scott Luce. Now, if they're going to, go the way of drafting and development, Scott Luce is a free agent.
Yep.
Is that not your first? See, to me, the hires are fascinating, both on the ice, behind the scenes, and from selfishly as well. Aren't you curious to see who the broadcast teams are going to be?
Oh, sure.
Right? Radio, television, ringside, host, all that stuff.
Oh, that's why the first thing they should do is steal Remenda. Oh, God, would he be perfect for that?
Drew Remenda in Vegas. He's got a good Vegas look, too, man.
He's got a good Vegas look.
His fashion is tight.
And he's also a guy that has experience working in a market where you have to hit that sweet spot between information and education. Like, he'd be perfect for that market.
Yeah, you know what? That's an excellent point, too, because I'd be curious to hear the nature of the coverage. Like, how much you're going to explain the game as it goes on. I'm always fascinated by that.
Well, that's why I think, Daryl Ray, who's obviously been a favorite on this program for a long time, hits that sweet spot, too. There are certain guys that just get it, that are able to do, a general broadcast that's entertaining, but also one that's educational and also one that's informative. I think Razor and Remender are both in that category. But you mentioned guys that should get hired, and obviously, the coach spot's going to be as fascinating as anything. And it wasn't until I started to kind of crack open McPhee and see why he got this job and see where he's, where he's going with his career and his thinking. It's the first time I thought, hold on a second. Are we going to see Ron Wilson coach an expansion team?
What's the hurry to hire a coach?
There isn't.
Like, that's the one you do next summer, isn't it?
Yeah. And in fact, McPhee kind of said, and this is one of those check marks on the detriment side, it's going to be a team that we give to a coach, not a team in which the coach has input on, which I find hilarious because, again, you're going to cite the Pittsburgh model up and down as far as the way we want to play and all this other garbage. But, you completely ignored one of the basic facets of that team's success, which was Jim Rutherford looking at Mike Johnston's system. Looking at Mike Sullivan's system and saying, yep, I'm going to get guys that fit that system. There's a certain symbiotic relationship between GM and coach that I think McPhee is kind of missing when he starts spouting off the Pittsburgh model. But Ron Wilson and McPhee had probably the best relationship he ever had with a coach was with Wilson. Mm-hmm. And Ron Wilson, say what you will about the guy, has a certain comportment and a certain charisma.
Oh, no doubt about it. And a certain snark.
Uh-huh. kind of about fit him? With that, I you know, the thing that you need when you're looking to make a splash as an expansion team. And him and McPhee go way back. And, you know, again, as we talked about, every time somebody gets hired in this dumb sport we cover, it's just all friendship and previous relationships. And, I mean, McPhee picked up Murray Craven, you know, from the airport when they were in Vancouver, and now Murray Craven hired McPhee. You know, it's just all the time. And Ron Wilson is the guy that McPhee trusts.
Murray Craven's going to be interesting in all this. Because I kept hearing that he was going to be the team president. And then I talked to someone last week who said, you know what, he's got a really nice spot being sort of the right-hand man to Bill Foley. And it's a very comfortable position. And maybe he doesn't want to abandon that. And, you know, it's funny, too, because the name that I heard right up until when it became obvious that it was going to be George McPhee was Norm McIver.
Yeah.
Of Chicago. That's mm-hmm. the one that I kept hearing over and over again. And whenever I ask about it, I say, well, I'm, you know, considering how Vegas is a pretty important market for the NHL here, why would they go with a rookie? And the answer I always got back was, well, they're going to insulate him with a lot of veteran guys. There'd be that veteran team around him. You take care of all that just by hiring George McPhee. Then
right.
you have your veteran general manager. But I don't know what you were hearing, but I was hearing Norm McIver right up until the end.
Yeah.
You know, Scott Mellenby's name's already been out there for Vegas as well. Norm McIver was the one that I kept coming back to.
Yep, absolutely. And also for the pedigree of it and everything else. And, but that's what's funny about it. It's like McPhee gets hired and people are like, oh, what an amazing opportunity. Every general manager worth his salt wants this opportunity to take a blank slate and create something in his own image. I'm like, really? I'm pretty sure there's another hockey guy in the organization who made this call. And that hockey guy, so long as he wants to be part of this Foley group, is going to be influential in player personnel and other things. And that's Murray Craven. And I mean, I think George is going to run show for sure. I think he's going to be the guy making calls and everything else. But I don't think for a second that there isn't a Murray Craven kind of looking down on him from a higher office within that organization for sure. He's got Foley's ear.
Here's another thing to consider as well. If you want to talk about Pittsburgh model, we got to play that way. That's the style that's going to be successful in the NHL. Who's letting those guys go in the expansion draft? You may want to play a certain way. You may have that in your mind. You may want players like that. Who's letting them go?
Are you trying to say
who's exposing
Dustin,
those players?
Dustin Brown isn't Carl Hagelin? Trying to say. Now, the other thing about Vegas that was really interesting that came out of that McPhee press conference was Foley saying that, you know, we're all like, oh, this is great, general manager. The general manager of the Las Vegas, what? And Foley's like, yeah, about that name. I'm finding out it's really hard to find names that haven't been trademarked already. And, like, he's been banging the drum about Black Knights forever because he's an old Army guy and he wanted to name the team the Black Knights. If you go on your Yahoo image search, don't use the competition, and look at the Army Black Knights logo, you'll notice two little letters next to that logo and that name. The letters T and M, trademarked. And I imagine what Bill Foley is starting to realize is that you can't just get a team and name it anything. There's a reason why Toronto went with Raptors, for God's sakes. So, you know.
Well, it's Jurassic Park. It's the number one movie in North America.
And also, no one's had it. Like, was a name no one had. So, like, I think he's starting to realize that it's a bit tough, but he's working with the NHL. He's working with Adidas. He's working with all these other people to figure something out. But I was saying to myself, is this just trying to cut through some red tape? But then Foley, during the press conference, is like, hey, if anybody has any ideas for a team name, just, you know, email us. I'm like,
Oh, great. Here we go. Bodie McBoatface. The Las Vegas Bodie McBoatfaces.
And then the other really interesting thing to come out of it was that the NHL basically said, look, man, you can get any name you want up in here, but it can't have connotations to gambling. And I'm like, first of all, well, that sucks because you put a team in Las Vegas. You know, it's like, it's a little tough to do that. You know, put a team in Florida, but don't have any references to animals or weather. And then the other thing I thought of is like, okay, fine. Like, what if you call a team the Aces though? Like, is that automatically?
Yeah, that'll be that would be. I love that name, but that goes back to the Quebec Aces of the old Quebec Senior League. I love
but
that
But I guess
name.
You can't
for
do that either, right?
Not a chance. No way.
Yeah, that's tough.
It's too bad, because with the gambling metaphors, you could have a lot of fun. Just ain't going to happen.
Yeah, I think it's going to happen anyway. Like, I think they're going to,
For sure.
Every headline on NHL.com is going to be a gambling reference. You just can't name a team.
I don't know about that. You know, you think that memo comes down from up on high? Hey, guys, dummy up on the gambling references in our headlines. Do you think so? I don't think NHL.com would do that.
Vegas goes bust. I don't think that's proper.
Actually,
how about Vegas loses?
Snake eyes. Nah, I don't think so, fellas. I don't think so. Not gonna happen.
I'm a little discouraged by all that news. I do hope he gets his wish, and you know, it ends up being the Black Knights. I think it'd be a really cool name, and obviously
Black Knights
gets around
cool name.
the gambling stuff. But I'm a little bit worried about the Foley Group and this trademark stuff. But all you gotta do, listen, whatever you do, black, gold, and white. Or see, you can throw some silver in there too. Just make a kick-ass jersey. Just make a kick-ass jersey, and you're going to make a mint just by having Las Vegas in the front of it.
Did we talk about Sunday home games on the podcast?
No, please do.
How about this for an idea? It's tough because on the one hand, you want the building full, and you're not going to get it with a Sunday afternoon game. But if you want to have the schedule help you, schedule home games Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock. So the visiting team has to fly in on the Saturday. Some teams, you're one shot at Vegas during the year. That's it.
Wow.
And you play in the afternoon.
It's not a bad idea.
Let schedule help you.
Yeah, not a bad idea.
Fly in Saturday, play on Sunday afternoon. Hmm. It's like, you know, what's the name of that? Dagobah, the old bar in Quebec City, which is still there. Which they always considered the seventh Nordique on the ice.
And what was it called?
Chez Dagobah. It's a famous, famous bar in Quebec City.
Where does Dagobah come from? Because that's very close to Dagobah, where Yoda lived.
Oh, yeah, I know. Star Wars, no, but it's totally different reference. But teams would go there and get plastered and then be a little bit, easy kill for the Nordiques the next night. And they always considered that bar to be Quebec's seventh
player.
Yeah,
I mean, home ice advantage is home ice advantage, right?
Yeah, man.
Exactly.
One o'clock, Sunday afternoons.
Intro our guest now, sir.
Tom Peraska is someone who is doing such valuable work. He is, you may know him better as at General Fanager, our famous and friendly, cap-friendly site. Tom joins us now to talk about the numerous contracts that have been flying around and some interesting sidebars to them, namely contracts that have lockout protection and buyout protection. We talked about expansion draft as well. How do these signings affect that draft? Our man at General Fanager, you can call him Tom, joins us now. Tom, how are you today, sir?
Good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing very well. We're just talking about Las Vegas a couple of seconds ago before you came on, and one of the interesting issues that we'll all see and all teams will be faced with is who to protect and who to leave exposed. As you look at all the signings, and this is what you do at General Fanager, when you look at all the signings and how teams are comprised, how does this upcoming expansion draft, or how is this upcoming expansion draft reflected in some of the signings we've seen this offseason?
Yeah, I think there's a variety of approaches. I think some teams are being a little bit cautious in terms of what they add this summer. Obviously, teams can either protect eight skaters or a mix of eight boards and three defensemen. Seven boards and three defensemen. In order to kind of maximize on that core list, they're being cautious in terms of the players that they add, either through free agency or through trade. But there's other teams that are kind of taking the opposite approach. And I think it's probably the right one. And that approach is add as much as you can, make yourself the best team that you can in the immediate future. Don't kind of allow the expansion draft to handicap that. And I think the approach, because, you only can lose one player in the draft. Everybody kind of talks about, well, you can only protect a certain amount of players, and then look at all the great players that you would potentially expose to be drafted, but you're only going to lose one of those players. So if you're going out and acquiring a unrestricted free agent this summer and you happen to lose him next summer, well, you got to figure out, by losing him, you someone else that you otherwise. The right approach is to add, but we've kind of seen a mixed approach among the teams.
Do you like the expansion draft rules they settled on? I mean, I feel like, you know, as we talked about earlier in the show, they've definitely stacked the deck, if you will, for Vegas. Do you think it's fair to the other 30 teams, the expansion draft rules they've settled on?
I think they're I personally really like them. We have an expansion draft tool on the site, and what we've seen from the early kind of results of people building out their Las Vegas team and all their protect lists is that there's going to be a lot of good players available to Las Vegas, and I think that's the right approach. It's really hard to kind of watch expansion teams coming into the league and struggle for years and years, and it doesn't really set them up well for success. So I think there's an opportunity for Las Vegas to be fairly competitive out of the gate. There's obviously limitations to that, but what we've seen is a lot of people are, and this is popular opinion, but a lot of people are drafting guys like Rick Nash and Troy Brower and guys like Tyler Myers and Mark Messot, and so good players that are potentially going to this Las Vegas team that will, I think, make them a competitive team.
You know, one of the things, Tom, that we mentioned on the last podcast was I can't tell you how many different agents this year that I've spoken to all come back to one theme with new contracts for their players, and that's lockout protection. Like, when I get them to break down, I ask them to break down their contract, one of the first things that comes out of their mouth is, and he got lockout protection. Yeah, we got lockout protection. We got lockout protection. Kyle Okposo, none. But a lot of the players, whether it's, you know, Aaron Ekblad, you know, go right down the list. A lot of these guys got protection for the 22-23 season. Two things. One, we're going to see more of this throughout the summer and in subsequent summers leading up to the next lockout. And do you think this will be one of the things the owners will go after come next lockout?
Yeah, so we've kind of had the same reaction from people that we talk to in the industry. It's all about kind of getting that protection. And it's not just lockout protection, it's buyout protection too. Buyouts are rising and good players are being bought out because of cap situations. So agents and players are looking to get that protection. So just in terms of some background there, for lockout protection, what people or agents and players commonly do to structure their deals for lockout protection is to build in high signing bonuses in the years that there could potentially be a lockout. So the CBA currently is set to expire September 15th, 2022, but either side could opt out of it in the 2020 season, so on September 15th. So agents will build in signing bonuses in either that 2020 season or the 2022 season, and as a result, even if there is a lockout, that large signing bonus will still be paid out to the player. So we're seeing a lot of that. But like I said, the other thing that we're seeing a lot of is contracts just being structured very highly in signing bonuses. Mm-hmm. And that's every single year. And so that's what we kind of refer to as buyout protection, because if a player is bought out, their signing bonus is still paid in full. That's not affected by the buyout. And that's when you get into the deals that are kind of called buyout proof deals. And I think we first saw our pioneer of that with the David Clarkson deal in Toronto, and everyone yep. called it the bio-proof deal, but there's been so many, and we've taken a look at the number of deals that have signed this season and the percentage of signing bonuses of the total pay. And so if we look at all the contracts and compare them in terms of highest percentage of total compensation paid as signing bonuses, of all our contracts in the top 12, eight of them were signed this summer, and Steven Stamkos led the way there with 88% of his contract and signing bonuses.
And Milan Lucic would be the obvious one. He's sort of, you know, this year's poster boy for that David Clarke bio-proof contract, correct?
Yeah, so Stamkos, Andrew Ladd, Louis Eriksson, Jamie Benn, Matt Martin, Kyle Okposo, Milan Lucic, all those guys got above 50% of their deal paid in signing bonuses, yeah. And so it makes them pretty much impossible to buy it.
I thought Kyle Okposo got straight salary, no bonus.
No.
Am I wrong on that?
Yeah, what we have is he got signing bonuses throughout the contract.
Hang on, what do I have here? Let me go to general manager here. oh, yeah, look. I was looking at performance bonus, not signing. You're right. My mistake.
While you do that, Merrick.
Tom's right. Surprise, surprise.
Tom. Yeah, I know. He only runs a salary site. Tom. What bothers you more, when you see someone floating a trade rumor? Does it bother you more that they don't check the cap numbers of the trade of the teams involved, or does it bother you more that they don't check the no move, no trade status of the players involved?
I don't really know. I guess the cap number one is more egregious. but at the same time, there's any trade can kind of be affected by retained salary and multiple. We've seen trades go through that when you look at them at first glance, you think there's no way that team could have made that work, but retained salary can typically make it work. So there's often more to the puzzle than at first glance. I don't really, the no move and no trade stuff is so kind of muggy, the waters of it. Oftentimes it's misreported in terms of who has a no move and no trade. I think we've gotten a lot better at that. But there's often still players that were traded before their no move or no trade came into effect, and neither the team or the agent want to comment on whether that clause has been honored by the team. So it's muggy waters, so we can kind of understand that that's not always considered when a trade rumor is floated up there.
And let me ask you about that, actually, as far as the site goes. I mean, you guys are bang on so much, and you become such a you know, resource for everybody involved. And sometimes you even get cited when people use your figures and stuff. Do you sometimes just have to take best guess when it comes to no move, no trade, things like that, and some of these salary figures, or does everything that hits the site, is it to the letter?
We'll often post things on the site once they've kind of been reported by somebody, and that's typically with an AAV and not much more. And so we'll post that on the site and we'll highlight it in yellow. So you'll often see certain contracts highlighted in yellow, and that just means that they're unconfirmed. And for every single contract, we do a pretty detailed sort of follow-up with anyone that will talk to us about it, as well as we have sources that kind of review all our contracts and help us out in terms of getting everything confirmed. So every contract does get confirmed individually, and we do our best to get every single detail. But like I said, with some of the details in terms of, like, if a player has a no trade clause, often nobody wants to comment in terms of how many teams he's allowed to put his list together with. So those sort of details sometimes get muggy, but for the most part, everything is confirmed in detail for what we have on our site.
I think what Greg was asking, Tom, is how did you get the password for NHL Central Registry? I want to go back.
I'm assuming he got Bob McKenzie drunk one night.
Probably. All right, here you go. There you go. You didn't get this from me. I want to go back to this idea of buyout as well. And I was having a conversation with someone last week with an NHL team who asked me this question, and it didn't have an answer. Maybe you do. Can you put in a contract a provision to buy a player out at a certain point in that contract, i.e., we're going to sign you to a five-year deal, but in this contract, we're going to agree that at the end of 2 years, we're going to buy you out. You can go, you know, double dip somewhere else. We only want you for a couple of years. Can you build that into a contract?
I would imagine that the contract would probably not get approved. There's no language in the CBA that really, at least not that we know of, that would prohibit that. But there is language that says, like, you can't restructure a deal once it's in place, and so that I think might fall under something like that. But obviously there's ways to get around that. Maybe there's verbal agreements or things like that that both the player and the team will know it's coming, but nobody else really will. So I would imagine you can't really officially and formally formalize that, but I think it probably could be done if there was an advantage to it.
Let me ask about a specific contract, and that would be Steven Stamkos. This was the biggest mystery of the summer. He ends up settling in for what many see as a hometown discount. What'd you think about that whole thing?
Yeah, it's a funny one because it took so long to do. It's by the time it was done, I mean, it was June 29th, I believe, and it came after a flurry of other activity, so it kind of got overshadowed. But at the end of the day, it is, from a cap hit perspective, it is a bit of a discount for Stamkos. But when you consider the fact that 88% of that is signing bonus, and he could pretty much just fall off the map for the rest of his career and still be paid huge money, then it's you kind of get some perspective on it. There's also obviously the factor, and it's well talked about, where Florida has lower tax rates. So there's, but I think Steven Stamkos probably sees what they're building in Tampa Bay. He sees that they need to sign Nikita Kucherov. He saw that they had to sign Victor Hedman, and he figured that that was probably a price he was willing to settle for, and probably didn't see a better fit anywhere else. So that's what he wants.
Yeah, how's Tampa going? And we saw Alex Killorn. It'll be made official tomorrow. Alex Killorn signing, re-upping rather with the Tampa Bay Lightning. 4.45 is the AAV there. So, you know, they're running out of, you know, the music's winding down and they're running out of chairs in Tampa. Who's the odd man, or maybe who do you think the odd men might be? Because they can't sign everyone and they can't keep everyone, Tom, as you know.
Yeah, and I think Chicago's proven that and proven a way to kind of work around that. I think Tampa's probably the most obvious sort of card they have to play is to move Ben Bishop. Yeah. Obviously, they've signed Vasilevsky to an extension, and obviously they can't keep both for the expansion draft. So once again, we touch back on Las Vegas. But I think Ben Bishop, if they can trade him, it opens up a lot of doors. I think they have no interest in not re-signing Kucherov, obviously, or moving him. Earlier in the offseason, I thought there might be some potential for an offer sheet there, but considering it hasn't happened yet, I doubt it will. Yeah. But he seems like someone they need to sign, and I think Bishop's probably the guy that he moves there.
Well, also, I think Kucherov is special. I think Palat is special. Yeah. I think Tyler Johnson is really, really good. But I also think that when it comes to centers with his offensive ability that hit the open market, teams get stupid. So I think I would rather keep the wings to begin with, but I also think that someone would give TJ a ridiculous contract as a UFA that Tampa wouldn't want to match anyway. That's kind of how I see it.
Yeah, with Johnson, he's still signed for this season, so it's not a rush, I wouldn't say. And I think his cap hit's 3.3, so... it wouldn't really open up too many doors. Obviously, it does help them, but I think Bishop's the bigger contract to move. But yeah, I totally agree with you. Moving forward, where they have to re-sign Palat and Jonathan Drouin next summer, Tyler Johnson might be the odd man out there.
Although, does anyone else not see them maybe trying to move Valtteri Filppula?
Yeah,
I mean, I'm sure one of the contingencies for Stamkos is, hey, I'm playing in the middle. Okay, so he's in the middle, and you have Tyler Johnson as well. You got Brian Boyle. Like, you're running out of center spots here. Is not maybe the more sane move just to see what you can get for Valtteri Filppula and get rid of his $5 million?
I think it's possible, and it's probably an option that they're looking at, as well as probably Ryan Callahan, but I think both guys are probably difficult to move given their cap hits, and the return on them might not be that great, and they both have no-move clause, I think, with both modified no-trade clause, so it hampers in terms of what you can do with those guys.
Do you have an encyclopedic knowledge of all the stuff on your site? Like, if we just named a player, would you be able to tell us if they have a no-move clause?
Absolutely not. It blends in so much at some point. There's guys that I remember quite clearly, but then there's just a blur once you get deep into it.
Go ahead, Ben.
I want to ask you about one spit. No, you know what? You're probably going to dovetail what we're talking. I'm going to get to Jared Cowan here in a couple of seconds. You ask your question, Wish.
No. You go to Jared Cowan because I'm more big
okay,
picture.
Okay, well,
on
Tom, you're the first guy that tweaked me to the Jared Cowan situation and how, you know, that acquisition with a buyout can actually put the Leafs in credit as opposed to a dash. It's all being arbitrated right now. But for those that may not be familiar with how this story played out, the Jared Cowan situation was a fascinating one. Can you go over sort of where it started? You know, the trade with Dion Phaneuf and the Ottawa Senators. From there to where we're at now in the hockey world with this Jared Cowan arbitration pending?
Yeah, sure. So Jared's situation's an interesting one to us. I kind of noticed that he had a buyout credit if he was going to be bought out that summer. It was something, when he was with Ottawa, it was just something I kind of happened to stumble on. And when I saw it, I was kind of surprised that he had that credit. I kind of looked back into the history to see if anything else had happened like that before. There was one other buyout that I found, and I can't remember who it was, but it was a minor credit in one of the years of the buyout, but it was spanned over 4 years, and it was only like $10,000 or something in credit. And it got me thinking, why is this credit happening? So the formula happens in the case where contracts are basically backloaded, and the Ottawa Senators are famous for doing this because as a budget team, they backload their deals so that it defers kind of when they have to pay them and then potentially trade those players before they have to pay the larger amount of their salary. So Cowan's deal is backloaded in the sense that he was set to make $4.5 million this year with a cap hit of $3.1 million. So that large variance there happens to cause the formula for the buyout to create a negative cap hit, and so there's a credit. So we tweeted it out, and then about 2 weeks later, we saw Jared Cowan get traded to Toronto. So that was interesting. And then we kind of figured that was probably going to be what his eventual fate would be. And then the Leafs kind of were quiet about his situation and not playing him. I kind of suspected that they might trade him to another team and try to get some value in terms of a draft pick or something in exchange
Chicago.
For that negative.
Everyone was looking at Chicago for Jared Cowan at the deadline, weren't they, Tom?
Yeah, exactly. And I thought that was probably going to happen. I think maybe and the fact that Lou Lamoriello, after the trade deadline passed, came out and said that their intention was to buy out Jared Cowan, I think that signaled the fact that right up until the deadline they were trying to trade him, but weren't able to get what they had wanted for him and decided, hey, well, if we're not going to get what we want, we might as well just take the credit for ourselves. And so after the deadline had passed, he announced that, and Jared Cowan didn't play another game for the rest of the season. And then obviously as the buyout window opened on the first day, the Leafs put Jared Cowan on buyout waivers. And then it kind of went silent for a little while, no one really saying anything. We had assumed that he probably was bought out because it's not always reported by the team after they've been put on buyout waivers. It's just assumed. And then right before the buyout window was set to close, there was a couple of reporters that reported that he had not been bought out. And in fact, they were in arbitration regarding his buyout case. And the issue was that he and his agent are claiming that he's injured and unable to be bought out. So that is a rule of having a buyout. You can't buy out an injured player. And I guess the Leafs had figured when they acquired him that he was fit to play and would be able to be bought out. And that's part of the reason they didn't play him for the rest of the season. But now it's become pretty interesting, to say the least.
For sure. As it always is with Lou Lamoriello, who is in some way, I imagine in some ways, you know, your site is essential for Lou as he tries to find ways to maneuver around the cap, in inventive ways. Two big picture things. First of all, your thoughts on teams with somewhat more frequency, although not a lot are doing it, releasing their own, salary numbers. Do you think we're going to get to a point where everything will be official from the teams and you won't have to worry about beat writers doing it?
I hope so. Yeah, we've seen more and more teams doing it. There's probably about a dozen now that do it. I think the Devils are probably the most recent to start after Lou Lamoriello left. And it's Vancouver also started this summer, I believe. So it's nice to see. It makes my job a lot easier, but I also think it makes everybody's job a lot easier. These numbers are going to come out one way or another. It's been shown that they do, and so it kind of wastes everybody's time, but everyone trying to chase down these numbers. And I'm not just talking about the beat writers or my time. I'm talking about the time of the PR and media relations people on those teams. They're wasting their time trying to track these numbers down, where if you just release them in the press release, then you kind of save all that time for everybody. So I think eventually we'll get to a point where every team will be doing it. I think a few teams are a little more archaic in that sense and not willing to release it. But I think at one point we'll get to the point where everybody will be doing it.
And last one for me, I asked Gary Bettman in beautiful Santa Clara, California, some time ago whether or not the NHL was going to do its own salary cap site in the mode of a general manager or a cap geek RIP. And Gary Bettman's the guy who told me, no, fans don't want that. There's no interest in doing it. I guess the two things are, one, what did you think when you read that? And two, Do you think it's just impossible for the NHL and the PA to get on the same page to do their own salary site?
So to answer your first question, so when I first read that, I read it as a fan, and I hadn't started General Manager yet. And I was starting it, but hadn't launched it yet. But as a fan myself, I knew that he wasn't right. I spend way too much time with this kind of information, and so I disagreed with what he said. And I think to some level, it's posturing, and he has to say what he's going to say. So I don't blame him for it. But I think the numbers that we've seen in terms of traffic and Twitter followers and everything has shown that a lot of people are really interested in this stuff. And it's hard not to be, because every single move that every team does is in some way informed by the salary cap. And that's part of the reason for everything that they do. So it's hard not to be interested in this stuff if you're really following the sport, because you need to have some sort of justification as to why your team has acquired Jared Cowan and he isn't playing for the rest of the year. So it's stuff like that I find a lot of fun to kind of analyze and try to figure out what's going on in these guys' heads. So that's the answer to part one. And then in terms of part two, I think we're probably a ways away from the NHL doing it themselves or with the PA. I think there's probably quietly some interest on both sides to doing it. I think they quite clearly see that a lot of people are using this type of information. Everybody's reporting it. Everybody cares about it. So I think at some point they'll probably jump on board and try to develop something. I think it'll take some time. But I think one day we may see an official sort of salary cap site.
I was going to say, they locked hockey out for an entire season and then did it a few years later for half a season for salary cap purposes. One, to get one, and then two, to massage one. I have a hard time believing, which is why I don't think that Gary was being completely sincere when he answered Greg's question, which is why I have a hard time believing that, you know, that they don't think that this type of information is valuable, or that people are interested in it, or that it is something that fans should have as a resource, to your point, Tom, so hockey fans can understand how their general managers are putting together their teams. I think where the resistance comes is the teams like the Toronto Maple Leafs, specifically now with Lou Lamoriello, the teams like the New York Rangers, who will, you know, go to their grave with their salary cap information. And I think one of the challenges, if you're the NHL, if you're Gary Bettman, one of the challenges is working with those groups to release that information voluntarily. But I come back to this one, though, Tom. I can understand the resistance from the clubs, and that's a headache that Gary Bettman and Bill Daly have to put up with. But if you're the Players Association, why not just do it yourself? You have all the information.
Yeah, and that's kind of a question I've tried to dig into. I think it makes sense for them. I doubt there's a lot of people going to NHLPA.com for the news releases or the player profiles. I think if they had salary cap information, there would be a ton of people going there. And I think they do have some salary, just current year salary and that sort of stuff. But the sense I get, at least from the conversations I've had, is that they need to get the NHL on board with them doing something like that. So I think it's really the powers in NHL's hands, and I think that's part of the agreement that they have, is that neither side can really do this until both sides agree to do it.
Okay, last one for me is actually two, Tom, and we'll let you get on with your afternoon. One, you did a nice presentation. Full disclosure, Tom did some work with us at Sportsnet around trade deadline. And did a really wonderful presentation about a week out, and going over various things, the Jared Cowan one being one of the more interesting ones. I love it when people who come from sort of a non-traditional background have a significant effect on the game, and you're one of them. If you can let people know sort of what your background is and how you came to run General Fanager, starting it, creating it, and maintaining it. And two, explain the logo, please, sir.
Sure. Oh, you mean the hot dog and the two Oreos on the garbage bag?
That's the first I've heard that, and I like it more now. So first, my background, I studied engineering, and then I kind of went into online marketing and sort of consulting in terms of project management type work. So not really hockey work, but it was kind of what I jumped into, and I got a lot of experience in sort of web design and that sort of stuff as a result of it. And then I started to do a little bit more web development. And when CapGeek went down, it was kind of unfortunate because I would continue to kind of go to CapGeek thinking that I could get my information there, but it wasn't there. So as a fan, I wanted to create something that would emulate it, or at least be able to bring to fans something that would be at least somewhat similar to CapGeek and have some of the features that it had. And so I started building it as a hobby. It was partially to learn a programming language I was working in. And then when I launched the site, I didn't really expect much to come out of it. I launched it last May, and then on day two, a couple blogs picked it up. Greg picked it up, and it kind of blew up from there. I tell a story, and it's a funny one. I was in a meeting at work, and I didn't have my phone with me, and when I got back to my desk, my phone was dead, which was weird. And the guy who sits beside me told me that my phone had been just buzzing off the hook, and he had no idea why. And I looked, and I had 9,000 Twitter followers in the span of 30 to an hour. So it was definitely weird. It was kind of a moment of what the heck have I just done? Am I going to be able to keep this up? And sort of it was a weird moment, but it kind of showed that the work kind of paid off, and there was other people like me who really loved this sort of information, and it just motivated me to keep going. And then from there, sources that we now work with quite routinely started to come out, and off their help, we did a lot of cold calling in terms of trying to get people to help and be on board. And now we kind of operate the site with a lot of sources that we can confidently report on a lot of information. So that's kind of how we've gotten to where we are. And then in terms of the logo, it was something that I had designed for her. It was actually a different website I was working on, also on hockey. But then when General Sanager launched, I decided to use it because I like it. I think it's a nice little icon. But the idea is that a lot of the fans that come to General Sanager and these cap sites are ones that are kind of disgruntled and upset with what's going on with their teams. And those are the types of fans that show up at games with paper bags on their faces. So we thought it was a nice, interesting fit, and there's a little bit of a story to it. I also grew up a Leafs fan, so the whole Harold
Roger
Ballard
Nelson
story. Yeah.
Roger Nelson. Oh, that's hilarious, Tom. Oh.
So yeah, that's part of what we like about it, and we kind of like that. It's not straightforward, and not everyone kind of gets it, but there's a little bit of a story behind it.
And that's, you know, you know what makes it artistic too, like the One Night's Touch, when you see the logo, the little spot shadow underneath, that to me is what makes it art. You know, there's like that next line, but whoever designed that, you did, someone else, that spot shadow underneath took the whole logo to a whole new level for me, Tom. So whoever did it, bravo, essentially, is what I'm saying.
Thank you.
All right, man. Keep up the great work. You
thanks,
are an essential resource to everyone, and like I kind of hinted at before, I hope that everybody who runs any media site anywhere that listens to this podcast and uses Fanager for anything does drop a little link love in there, or at least a citation as to where they get their facts and figures from.
And you know what? And one more thing, Tom, and this is more going to be a threat than anything else. Don't be like these analytics guys and then get us all addicted to your site and then leave to join an NHL team. Don't be one of those guys, all right?
You got it. I don't think we're going anywhere. I definitely love the site, and it's become something that I've become so accustomed to. I can't see myself leaving it. So.
Yeah, I was actually going to mention that before when you said that you did a presentation for the guys at Sportsnet, that it was refreshing to hear someone doing a numbers presentation for hockey people in Canada and then not getting fired by Mark Bergevin. So that's kind of a refreshing change.
Oh, the zing. Hey, a little Matt Pfeffer reference to that and the interview here with Tom. Thanks, Tom. We'll check in soon, pal. Have a good summer.
Thanks so much, guys.
Tom Porazka is the curator, owner, runner, bon vivant, man about town. No, he's the guy that does everything for General Fanager.
That's great.
He's a really, really impressive guy.
Really impressive guy, really impressive site. Looking at it right now, in fact, looking at the Dallas Stars, who will add a few more shekels to their cap number, beginning in 2017-18. $9.5 million annually for Jamie Benn. Now,
you know who wins?
Who?
Well, Jamie Benn. But you know who else wins? Dallas Stars fans that don't have to go through a Stamkos saga with one of their franchise players.
Right.
But I actually heard someone float the idea that he took a discount to stay in Dallas, and that might be, you know, true. I think he probably could have gotten another $1 million against the cap somewhere else and gotten over 10. But still, 9.5 is a pretty franchise price, and you're gonna at least pay Sagan that, you know, in a couple of years too.
Yeah, when is he up? Let's go to the fan. He's up.
Sagan's up in 2019.
Yep. Yeah, he's gonna get paid too. I mean, the big one that we're all waiting for, and if you look at the history of the Orr Group, it's been pretty spectacular for blowing through second contracts, whether it was Hall or Jeff Skinner, which blew open the second contract. Yeah, Ekblad's second contract was huge. What's the number we're talking about at this time next season, Wish, for McDavid?
10?
That's a little light.
Well, here's the thing, though. Like, the thing that we all have to kind of figure out here is the nature of the hockey player. And every time we go into one of these things, we're all like, oh, it's going to be 10. It's going to be 10.5. It's going to be astronomical. Stamkos can get, you know, 12. And then it comes back to, well, yeah, but they know if they take that number, how many things that's going to affect going down the line for their team.
If you can't win with a $14 million Connor McDavid, then shame on you.
But, Merrick, listen, I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying, but it's not about the management side of it. It's about the player side of it. Yeah. And the player side of it's going to say, maybe, you know, considering I'm getting these endorsements and I'm getting this and that, I don't need to take 13 or 12.
I don't know. He's going to look in a brand new building in Edmonton this year. Everyone wearing, you know, McDavid jerseys.
I'm not saying he's not worth it. I'm not saying he
couldn't
get it.
Economic revitalization of the downtown in Edmonton.
Daryl Cates and the Oilers are, if nothing, compensators to their talent, as we've seen, right? Like, no question. Those are some big fat contracts there. But, like, as a part of me that just kind of wonders if he would go a little bit lower than you think just because that's how championship teams are built. You know, take a note from Sid.
Nah. You can't win with a guy that expensive.
Chicago's an anomaly. Those are two guys that took the money. And even though they have to shed talent every year because of it, they win.
That's not McDavid's problem.
I know it's not McDavid's problem. I'm just saying that it wouldn't surprise me if he.
But this is what we talked about. This is what we talked about back in 205. The salary. This will be a situation where salary cap will pit player against player, and it can't be McDavid's. I mean, it will be if you know the player. I don't think he's going to want to come in and say, "Okay, what's the max? $15 million? Yeah, I'll take that. It's an easy contract to do." I don't think he'll do that. But I wouldn't be surprised if next year, like honestly, he becomes the highest paid player in the NHL.
And rightfully so.
We may be talking about him as being the best player in the NHL a year from now. Mm-hmm. Like by the time he gets out of his entry level deal, do you expect him to be the best player in the NHL?
Yes.
Yeah. I know. We're saying it slowly now. But as this season goes on, if he stays healthy, we'll say it pretty quickly.
Well, I mean, anyone that's
shared ice with him comes off. Like I just did this thing with Orr Group last week up at St. Andrews in a little bit north of Toronto, and all the guys that were skating with him, like NHLers, were just like they're all like all those world championship guys too. They're all like, I had no idea he was that good.
Yeah, he's great.
Like, he's just next level.
Could use a little sandpaper, to be honest with you, a little grit.
Oh, good Lord.
doesn't fight. I mean, you know. Oh, wait, he does fight. He shouldn't fight, though.
Punching out boards and breaking his hand.
But what did you think of the Ben deal?
I think it's bang on. 9.5 is a nice number for Jamie Benn, and you never get in trouble when you pay your big guys like that. Mm-hmm. The problem happens when your bottom six guys start to get paid more than they're worth. That's where you get into real trouble. Right. But it's very rare, if ever, that you get in trouble when you pay your big boys. 26 mm-hmm. years old, he's been 27 when the contract starts. Still in the sweet spot of the career.
Oh, incredibly talented player, and the straw that stirs the drink down there too.
You look at the holy trinity of left wingers in the NHL. It's a combination of Ovechkin, Taylor Hall, and Jamie Benn.
Thank you for including Taylor Hall.
No problem. I know. I wanted to make you happy on this Sunday. A show could not go by where we didn't mention Taylor Hall on the program. I read correctly? He's going to take number 9?
He is taking number 9. You can easily just throw a little electrical tape on those Parise jerseys and go from there.
No, that's like one of the most iconic. Well, again, he went from 4. He's taken. Dude's got like. He's like. Think about this. Probably the two most iconic numbers in hockey history.
Yep.
4 and 9.
And 9. Yep.
We're going to have worn them both.
Pretty crazy, right?
Although this generation, it's 19. Right? It's all like the Sackett Geiserman lovers from the last generation that grew up watching
that's
those two. All the kids wanted 19.
That's a good point.
But sort of overall, 4 and 9 have been the numbers. Taylor Hall's going to wear both.
Does that stick to goalie numbers, too? Do 33 and 30 mean anything to these guys?
Well, for a lot, it's funny because for a lot of guys, Russians plus Ed Belfour, the number 20 was always sacred.
Right.
Right. And Belfour was trained by Tretiak, went to his hockey school a few times.
I love any goalie that wears number 1. Any goalie that wears number 1 is number 1 in my books. I love that.
John Davidson, 00 right here, homie.
Oh, that's
a good one. Bring that back. JD, the pioneer.
We could do seven weeks on uniform numbers on this podcast because it's an obsession of both of ours. Like 44.
I know, me too.
Oh, a scoring winger with like 44 like Richey had.
84 was a special one. You know why?
Why?
The minute that Guillaume Latendresse put on the number 84, then officially every number from 0 to 99 had been used in the NHL.
Oh, is that right?
Yep, Guillaume Latendresse was the guy that finished it off. Remember when he put it on, like, oh, fine, it's done. It's done. Because forever you go through all the numbers, and there'd be one standing out, 84. No one had ever worn it. And the Habs gave him 84. I wonder how – I don't know the backstory on it, but I wonder if that was deliberate. Okay, this is gonna finish up the NHL.
I told everybody that Taylor Hall should have taken 98, one over Connor.
It's Brian Lawton's number. Have some respect.
Ooh, maybe you should take 98.
That's right. There you go.
Well, I guess finally, any final thoughts on all the PK stuff in the last week? Engels sat down with him, and you know, the
great
interview
piece.
It was good. It was a good sit down. It was definitely, you know, Bergevin and PK now both guilty of dancing around the issues a bit, but that's fine. I thought from an emotional standpoint, it was really enlightening as far as PK's feelings on the whole thing. But what are your revised thoughts on this situation?
The excuse is gone. Okay. All season long, we heard, oh, he's a distraction. Oh, one of the big issues, of course, was the injury to Carey Price. But, you know, we kept hearing all season long, oh, this guy is a distraction. They got to get him out of the room. Okay. You know what? So all those players that wanted PK Subban, one of the best defensemen in the NHL, one of the best defensemen in the world right now. You wanted him out of the room because you couldn't do business with him. Mm-hmm. A, I would say shame on you, but fine. You get what you want. You got your wish. Now all the pressure is all on those guys in the room because the excuse is gone. From the captain right on down. For anyone that wanted him out. And that might include the coach.
Mm-hmm. That's
so
right.
It includes the general manager.
And he did not mention either of those. Didn't mention either of those gentlemen vis-a-vis his feelings about leaving Montreal. Said he's going to miss Jeff Molson. Said he's going to miss his teammates. Did not say really anything about the GM or the coach. I do once the thing. The only thing that really pissed me off about PK's interview at Sportsnet was, like, Engels asks him, so, you know, why do you think this all happened? And PK's like, you know, to be honest, I really haven't thought about it. I'm like, come on.
Yeah, I know.
Like,
yeah,
come on. Like. Come on. At least give us, you know, I have my theories, but I'd like to keep them to myself. At least give us the courtesy of not being two countries worth of idiots.
You know what, not think
that you're on that plane back from vacation mulling over every single dagger in your back from the Montreal Canadiens.
I think what this has revealed for a lot of people is the NHL. We've talked a lot about how the NHL has a problem with kids, mm-hmm. and they don't know how to handle kids that, you know, don't subscribe to this very specific, you know, system of order and discipline. But through the PK Subban situation in Montreal, what it's reinforced to me is I think what the NHL has as well is a problem with players that see themselves as business partners and not employees. You know, it almost seems
that's a really interesting point.
PK Subban is PK Subban 24 hours a day. I hate using the term brand because I feel like a douchebag when I say it, but I'm going to say it. There's that brand that he has, and he is constantly polishing that mirror. He is shining that every opportunity he gets because he is in the business of being PK Subban. That's his business. And I think from Subban's point of view, as much as he is a member of the Montreal Canadiens and a teammate, I also think that in the back of his mind, he's someone that says, I'm a business, they're a business, we're doing business together.
Right.
I think the NHL has a real hard time with someone that just doesn't bow their head and say, yes, coach, okay, coach.
Right.
As opposed to someone who, when the cameras are around, he wants to make sure that his brand is shining.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to make sure that he looks good. He wants to make sure that he's involved in all the right things. I'm not saying that cynically about, you know, any of his charity endeavors. I'm not criticizing that at all. But that is a part of who he is. His generosity is part of brand PK Subban. And I think that can rub a lot of players the wrong way, and shame on them for it, because all PK Subban is doing business for himself in partnership with the Montreal Canadiens, or was in partnership with the Montreal Canadiens. And I think that made a lot of both players, coaches, managers, and maybe even owners uncomfortable, because here's someone that said, hey, we heard Gary Bettman talk a lot about partnership in the lockout in 2005. I'm not an employee. I'm a partner. Now treat me as such.
Which is ironic because, you know, in the NBA, it's the opposite.
It is the assumption
that players are a brand.
Yes.
And that brand is coming
to
make your light up your room, not the other way around.
Yeah. Totally. The basketball guys get it. And whose salary cap is going up by $30 million next year?
You know, like, it's bad enough that when you compare the NHL to the NBA ratings in the U.S., that's the disparity is embarrassing. But then, like, you know, we're all covering this free agent stuff at the NHL. We're like, oh, he signed for, you know, $40 million. And it's like the ninth guy on the bench from the Warriors is going to sign a contract for $125 million someplace. Just like, Jesus. I remember when baseball salaries had gotten to that point where, like, Alex Rodriguez was signing, like, $100 million contracts. Just like, wow, that's crazy. But, like, even, like, the B-minus level guys in the NBA sign contracts of $80 million and above now. It's crazy.
Like I know I'm, one of the more casual basketball fans you'll ever meet. But honestly, some of these names come at me out of nowhere with huge dollar signs next to them.
I'll even ask
like my friends that are big basketball fans, and I'll be like, "I don't know who this person is. Does he really deserve $100 million?" And the answer usually back lately is, "Well, no, but that's going great now in the NBA."
Right, and I'm with you because, like, as a basketball fan, like my basketball fandom ebbs and flows as the Nets do. So it's at an all-time low right now because they're a terrible team and they don't have any draft picks for a while. But, like, there were a few names that got signed during the NBA free agent frenzy where I went to my basketball fan friends. I'm just like, this name's made up, right? Like, this is just like a name that someone sent to, like, Adrian Wojnarowski and said, hey, you know, I heard this guy sign, and he just, like, retweeted it by accident. Like, that's a made-up name, right? They're like, no, he scored like 10 points a game with the Hawks last year. I'm like, oh, Jesus. Okay. I guess he's worth the gross national product of Belize. Sure. Why not?
Yeah. But you're right, because your point about basketball is bang on. Like, that sport understands it. Like, the nature of athlete partnership. And that's what all these guys really are, right? They're like mini corporations. We've talked about this. But I think PK more than anybody else, A, believes it more than anybody else and acts like it more than anybody else.
So I guess
really
the question is,
that made Montreal
is the sport ever going to catch up to it? And does
does
the sport ever have to catch up to it? Because you're essentially talking about a different type of athlete in the mentality of it. I mean, as much as we talk about the cliches of it all, like,
you know, John Tavares is going to make a buttload of money, and Jamie Benn just made a buttload of money. And in neither case is it, I'm keeping my brand in Dallas or I'm keeping my brand in Brooklyn. Like, it's just the guy signing a contract.
It's coming.
You think so?
It's coming.
I hope it does.
Absolutely it is. The way that, you know, players now, you know, from very early ages have very specific coaches and trainers on ice, off ice, that regulate their lives, I think you're going to start to see. And more so in a salary cap world than ever before, because things become more important. It's not just, oh, I'm just going to go chase the most money. It's going to be, I'm going to put myself in the situation to make the most money with my brand. God, I hate that word. With my brand. I'm going to do that. And I think you'll start to see more of it. It just isn't, what was it that Stravinsky always said about revolution? There's no such thing as revolution. There's only evolution fast and slow. And it's been slow in the NHL for a long time. But I kind of get the feeling that, and Subban may be the touchstone for it, the initial point of entry, but I kind of see this ball rolling more and more, and that evolution will get, you know, fast forward pressed on it.
Hey, I'm all for it, and Lord knows it's going to eventually help if these guys all get a little bit of marketing savvy and start to promote their own brands a little bit. You know. All right, that's the show. What was that dude's name from Fanatures last name? I forget.
Tom Peraska.
Yeah, great Peraska. Dude. There it is.
Smart
Tom
guy.
Tom Peraska from General Fanature was generally great.
He was generally great. That's a generally great website.
Thanks to producer Sam for throwing this together on an afternoon. It's always a good thing.
He was generally great.
He was generally great too.
He's very concerned about Austin Matthews and the Lou Lamoriello standoff. With no bonuses for rookies. See how this one plays out.
Mm-hmm. Very concerned about this. Give the man his money.
Pay the man his money. He'll be fine. I'm pretty sure. Don't worry, Shanny's going to step in and grease the wheels, grease the gears to get this thing done. Wasn't that the thing we heard?
Yeah. Okay.
Get greasing, Shanny. Get greasing.
And hope everybody's having a good hockey summer so far. We'll do a couple more of these before I shove off to Rio. And
yeah, you're going. I'm just doing studio work for it.
Now, what kind of studio work are you doing? I didn't know that.
I am hosting on Sportsnet 1 to 6 for the entire Olympics. Every day, homie.
1 to 6 in the afternoon for the entire Olympics? Yep. So round the horn.
Yeah, just
kind
linking
of
from
coverage.
Linking from sport to sport. I don't know how much air, because it's right in the sort of sweet spot of when a lot of the events are coming on, so I'm not sure I'm going to be on the air a ton. I think a lot of it's going to be, and now we go, and now let's go to the pool. Meanwhile, archery, and, you know, I think it's going to be that.
How much
this link between sports?
How much Canadian Olympic coverage is predicting the NHL Olympic rosters in Pyeongchang?
I'll tell you what, it's funny because one of the first things I did was look for NHL. Such a loser. Was look for NHL connotations. And you'll be happy to know that Penny Oleksiak, swimmer for Team Canada, is the sister of Jamie Oleksiak.
Oh, that's awesome.
For the Dallas Stars.
Meanwhile,
expect that to come up when I'm on the air.
Otherwise, I'm guessing it's intense coverage of Ray Whitney being a caddy in the Olympic golf thing, right?
Yeah.
We break in with coverage now. Ray Whitney is suggesting a 5-iron for this hole.
And Ray, while we have you, you know, we all thought that after the back surgery, that was it for you. But explain those last few years. I mean, you were productive right up until the end. We now return to the pool.
Miss you guys. Love you guys.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. And we'll talk to you soon. Bye.